I think it's hard to say. Clearly, there is great public skepticism about how to help with the Syrian conflict. There's no doubt about that. People see this conflict, they see the brutality, they look at the brutality of the regime, but they're also very worried, rightly, about some of the people involved in the opposition. And so I understand public skepticism. I think the case, though, that needs to be made and will continue to be made is that the world benefits from this international taboo on chemical weapons. And I think President Obama will be extremely persuasive in making that case. And obviously the argument has to be made and has to be won. More evidence, I'm sure, will be produced. I don't think we should put too much emphasis on the UN inspectors themselves, because, of course, they're not there to find who was to blame. That's not part of their role. All they can do is find some additional evidence of the use of chemical weapons. But the use of chemical weapons isn't really in dispute. Everyone accepts chemical weapons were used on the 21st of August. That's accepted, I think, even by the Syrian regime itself. So we shouldn't put too much weight on that. But I hope a picture will build and build, not only of chemical weapons use, but also of regime culpability. I'm convinced of that case. One of the arguments I made last night is, in order to believe that the opposition are responsible, you have to construct an almost impossible case that they used weapons they didn't have, a delivery system they don't own, that they attacked an area they were in control of, that they made then hundreds of videos posted up onto the internet. It is impossible to believe. But in spite of that, some people, including some at this G20 conference, take that view. So there's an argument that has to be continued to be made and has to continue to be won. Let's try again on microphones. Chris Shipp.
Take two. Thank you, Prime Minister. Chris Shipp from ITV News. When you look at the list of countries who have said at this summit that there cannot be any military action without the authority of the United Nations, and let's be frank, President Putin was quite happy to list all those countries a few moments ago, has the G20 made President Obama's job more difficult? Are military strikes now, in effect, less likely?
Well, as I say, I thought at the meeting last night, those people, including the Turks, the Saudi Arabians, the Americans, the British, the Canadians, the French, who made the arguments about the taboo of chemical weapons, about the importance of the world responding, I thought we had by far the better of the argument. But I will make this point. Yes, a number of countries make the argument that action is only justified if sanctioned by the UN Security Council or in self-defense. And I think we do have internationally to take on this argument because, as I've said before, if we accept that the only way a response can be made to a country that, let's say, it was massacring half or more than half its people, if we're saying there can only be a response if the UN Security Council votes positively, we are, in fact, contracting out our foreign policy, our morality, to the potential of a Russian veto. Now, I think that is a very misguided approach. And that was what was frustrating in some ways about the debate last night, is some of the participants were saying, well, this has to be decided by the UN Security Council, knowing that they themselves sat on the UN Security Council and could veto any decision. So I think the argument, which many countries believe, it's not about individuals, this is about the Attorney General in Britain, the Attorney General in Canada, the Attorney General in Australia. Many of us believe that there is a case for taking action when you are trying to prevent a humanitarian emergency, and that does not, it's better with the UN Security Council resolution, but you cannot rule out taking action if you cannot get one. And I think we should have learned from some of the genocides we've seen in our world that there is an imperative for a line to be drawn, and that may well happen again in the future. So I think by all means, let the G20 debate this issue about is the only way you can take action, a UN Security Council resolution, but I know where I stand on that point. Gary Gibbon from Channel 4.
Thank you very much indeed. You talked about the imperative there, and you've been talking for a while about the dire consequences if the Syrian action is not met with a tough response. So can I ask, if President Obama doesn't manage to get both houses of Congress's approval, do you want him to go ahead anyway? Is it necessary for the world that he, as far as you're concerned, that he goes ahead anyway? And can I just ask you, President Putin said the majority of the countries represented in the room last night were against military action, and the majorities of populations in the countries where leaders do support military action are also against military action. Is he right?
Well, first of all, on the second issue, we didn't take a vote at the meeting last night. The G20 is here to discuss the economy, the global economy, and the global rules that apply in our economy. Because Syria is such an important issue, President Putin, in my view, rightly said we should have a discussion about it at dinner. As I say, the arguments I heard and the number of countries stacking up to argue that the world should maintain and uphold the taboo on the use of chemical weapons, I thought, had much the better of the arguments and a bigger share of the voice. But this is not an organisation where you hold a vote. But nonetheless, these arguments will go on being made, which leads to your first question. And Barack Obama, who I believe will make an extremely persuasive case to Congress, that's a matter for him and a matter for Congress. It's not for me to judge that. The point I've made and will make again is that if we live in a world where the US president, with others, draws a red line and says that consequences must follow, and no consequences do follow, I fear for that world, because not just the dictator in question, Assad, will, I believe, think he has impunity to use chemical weapons further, but other dictators, other countries, will draw the same lesson. And that was one of the very powerful arguments made by a lot of the European countries last night. We lived in a world, our countries, where chemical weapons were used on the battlefield. We suffered hugely in the First World War from those appalling events, and the world came together afterwards to decide to rule chemical weapons out, and countries across the world, Syria included, assigned that. So that is, I think, the concern were nothing to happen. But as I say, I'm confident that Barack Obama is making a very persuasive case and is very clear about what he needs to do. Joey, and then Bridget Kendall from BBC.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Given you've just tweeted about it, can I ask you what's going on with all this small island business? You've got one of your MPs flat out insulting the Russian president, and I'd like to know what you think about that. And you have found the time during your presumably about 3 hours of sleep to compose a jolly uplifting ode to all things British. Anybody would think a nerve has been touched.
No, not at all. Look, as far as I can see, this whole issue has now been denied by the Russian spokesman. They claim they never said such a thing. All I said to the British press earlier is something I believe very deeply, which is, yes, we are a small island. In fact, a small group of islands. But I would challenge anyone to come up with a country with a prouder history, with a bigger heart, with a greater resilience. As I said, this is a country that cleared the European continent of fascism, that took slavery off the high seas. We're a country that's invented many of the things that are most worthwhile, everything from the Industrial Revolution to the television to the World Wide Web. Our music delights and amuses millions. The Beatles, Elgar, and slightly less congressly One Direction have conquered the world. We've invented most of the sports that the world most likes playing. But as I said earlier, if I go on too long about our literature, our art, our philosophy, our contribution, including, of course, the world's language, if I start talking about this this blessed plot, this sceptred isle, this England, I might have to put it to music, so I think I'll leave it there.
What about your MP?
Oh, my MP. Well, I, as you know, I'm not a regular follower of Twitter, but, you know, insulting people should never have a part in foreign policy. We should try to maintain good manners and politeness, even when under intolerable pressure. Bridget.
Thank you. I'm Bridget Kendall from BBC. On this crucial wider question of Syria, this is a gathering here at G20 of some of the biggest and most powerful nations in the world. If you were going to build a case for military strikes against Syria, wasn't it really important to win over the leaders here? Isn't it really quite a serious setback that this gathering remains so deeply divided?
Well, I think this gathering was always going to be divided over the issue of Syria. I don't think that is in the slightest bit surprising. As I say, what struck me in the debate about Syria last night is those countries making the arguments that we should uphold the international taboo on the use of chemical weapons had the best arguments, the best evidence, and the clearest views and I thought, greatest support. And this is not, let's be clear, just a position taken by the United States and European countries that saw firsthand what chemical weapons can do. This is an argument backed, as far as I can see, by Turkey, by Saudi Arabia. A very strong stance was taken by Japan, particularly on the issue of chemical weapons. All these countries will speak for themselves. But this wasn't, as I say, just the US and Europe making an argument. I mean, if you want to look back to the arguments about Iraq in 2003, you know, I was surprised, not surprised, I was pleased by the very strong voices that came out about this international taboo. And the differences with Iraq and international gatherings are important. You know, we're not looking for chemical weapons. The evidence of their use is in front of our eyes. But the G20 was never going to be about making a decision. It was never going to be about holding a vote. This is an economic gathering that had a discussion about Syria, where I think the case for upholding the international taboo was put with huge clarity and a lot of vigor and a lot of vision. Final question, if anyone's got a burning one, Tom Newton Dunn.
Prime Minister, are you worried at all about the increasingly large number of threatened reprisals coming out of the Middle Eastern region? The Americans intercepted communications from Iran to elements in Iraq, telling them to attack US interests in Baghdad if the Americans strike. Assad even is apparently threatening biological weapon attack, according to the Washington Post.
Well, the point I would make to that is that Britain, America, Europe, we face threats from this region every day of our lives. Europe has just come together very recently under a suggestion from me and others that we needed to properly prescribe and outlaw the military wing of Hezbollah. We did that because of the appalling attacks that took place in Bulgaria and elsewhere. So it's not some surprise that people who believe in democracy, in pluralism, in freedom, are subject to attack by extremists. That's the threat that we live with. But I think when we approach this issue of chemical weapons, we need to be clear-eyed and firm of purpose in responding. And of course, there will be plenty of noises and warnings and everything else. But as I say, the American president, I think, was right when he drew a red line about major chemical weapons use, and he's right to be tough in following up on the consequences of the action that the Assad regime took. Can I thank you all very much indeed for coming to the press conference? And.